All right. Today we have Miss Lisa on the podcast. Lisa and I met through Irene Lyons' SPT group. She's such a sweetheart. She's got a big heart. I've always loved connecting with her. And I know you guys are going to love today, too. She's an expert in body work and fashion, has done some really cool things here lately. And excited to dive in. Lisa, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Mitch. I'm looking forward to the conversation. We'll see where it goes.
We'll see. So always kind of like to start with, you know, this journey of trauma and healing and your journey. And I just am curious, what got you interested? How'd you get here?
Yeah. So should I say here as in how did I find Irene, since that's our connection?
Yeah. What got you interested in trauma work? And we'd love to hear about, you know, Smart Bike and our time with her, wherever feels right.
Okay. So I guess I'll kind of summarize my background, because I thought I was fine. I thought because I was working as a physical therapist, I am a mom to 4 children, seemed pretty functional. I really thought I was okay. Didn't really notice that I was unwell until there was a pivotal time. I ended up having to see a counselor as a result of something going on with one of my children. And he asked me a real simple question about my background. And when I shared with him about my childhood trauma, he said, "Wow, you speak about it so gently. You must have gone through all your therapy." And I said, "Nope, I'm fine. Look at me." Yeah. Again, I'm a PT, I'm a mom, I'm a wife, I'm a householder. I'm doing just fine. I think I even had my hands on my hips, like, look at me. And he said, "Okay, I want to tell you that I think you might be in some denial over the impact, because what you shared with me was pretty rough." And I thought, okay. And as a people pleaser, a rule follower, I decided, all right, I'll go see a therapist. And I started talk therapy. This was in 2016.
Okay.
And I saw her and we dug in deep right away. I did all the things. I went twice a week. I journal wrote. I did timelines. I did all the things, digging up pictures, you name it. I thought, this is what I have to do. I have to get through this. But my system completely revolted. My skin blew up. My face was so... If I showed you a picture of it, you wouldn't even believe it's me.
Wow.
So my face was blown up. It was red and hot. And I kept just blowing it off, Mitch. Like, I'm fine. I would put oils on it. Nothing. And then it started creeping under my armpits. And I was like, okay, this isn't good. And I remember waking up. It was my son's 17th birthday. And I remember I wanted to do something special because he was 17 on December 17th. And he walked down the steps and I start crying. And I said, I can't have a party today. I have to go to the emergency room. And I went into the emergency room. I had a hat on and sunglasses. And when I got to the check-in and I took off my glasses, the attendant shuddered. She was like, "Ooh." And that's when it hit me. When I saw her response to the way I looked, like, it didn't seem like it fazed my family. Like, I didn't notice that it fazed them. I didn't notice that it fazed anyone. Even though I was miserable and I was burning and I couldn't take a shower. I mean, it was a mess. So that point, I went back to my therapist and I said, I think I'm doing too much. I need to stop. Wow. So she gave me a break. And in that break, things calmed down a little bit. And I recognized that what I really needed was a group. I just had this knowing, I feel like I need a support group. So I found a support group sometime later. And in that support group, there was a facilitator that started talking about nervous system, trauma, survival stress, survival mood, all the things that we know now. And these are words that, of course, I've heard, but it was the way she said them that made me go, oh, I think there's more to this story. And I had so much shame around it because I felt like I should have known. I don't have shame anymore, but I had a lot of shame with that. So I decided I better look up what is all this survival, stored stress, survival mode. And I found Irene's work. What brought me into it is her three-part healing series. I resonated with it, and I knew my body immediately felt better when I said, that's the missing piece. Mm. So I did that and started the 21 days. Not too long after that, it took me about a year to get through that. And then not too long after I finished that, I started Smart Body, Smart Mind. The first time I did that was 2019.
So 2016 is when you start the talk therapy. And you started 21 day in 18, 19?
I can't remember exactly when that was. That's a little bit foggy, but I do remember 2019 is when I did Smart Body, Smart Mind for the first time.
I think it's, I don't want to cut you off. Keep going if there's more.
Yeah. What I'm just thinking of right now is how did I stay so well, even though I was unwell? And if I unpack all the things that I actually had going on that I just ignored, it was a lot. Mm-hmm. I think what kept me well or well enough is doing a lot of the things that most of us somatic practitioners, body workers, physical therapists, yoga practitioners tend to do, I was doing because I went through physical therapy. I was an exercise physiologist, so I was moving. I was learning about the body. And then I ended up in a yoga teacher training, and I noticed I was digging into some deeper things, and I decided to go through the second level. And it wasn't just your run-of-the-mill yoga training. It was deep dives in person, and I knew some things were happening. There was definitely a knowing there. And then I did some continuing education with myofascial release, and the power of that was amazing. So things were working, but what was missing is I had no education on the nervous system. I had no idea that I was in survival mode. I had no idea I was living in a functional freeze. I just didn't know. So once I had that knowing and put the education along with all the physical practices and the journaling and the gratitude and the yoga practice, not that I do all of those things all the time, but when you piece those things together, that's where you can have true healing.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Yeah, I definitely got emotional hearing that because I can resonate so much with that. The feeling I'm fine and the moment of having someone be like, honey, you know, like you got some shit to deal with. I mean, I definitely had that moment as well. And how amazing that those people come into our life or those really, I hear a lot of intuition as well. You know, you recognized, hey, I'm doing too much too fast is what I hear.
Yep.
You know, we were kind of talking about that a little bit. Getting on, you know, sequencing our healing and easy to roll our eyes when we hear sequencing our healing. And then there are kind of some steps that we can see, although it's all about, you know, as you demonstrate here, following your impulse and listening to the body and, you know, having this moment of reckoning where we realize like, oh, wow, there's more here than I expected. I also see such a common theme of the skin breaking out is like a big moment for so many people that have healed.
Yeah.
it's I had my moment after falling out of a window, and I felt like I had body herpes. You know, I used to call it that because it was just, is that, was it psoriasis? Did they give it a name? Like, or is it just?
It was
eczema.
Eczema. But it was severe cracking. Yeah, it was pretty bad. What's interesting now is I'll have a little bit pop in, and then I notice it's my teacher. You know, here's a little skin flare. What's going on? What am I needing? What am I not doing? What do I need to do? You know, and just really taking time to listen to what my body needs. So it's kind of cool that I have that guide now, but I have never had a flare like that again. Just minor. I wouldn't even say minor. It was like next to nothing. It's just like, ooh, almost like a little pimple popped up. Like, that's about it.
My skin has been my guide as well. I used to think, you know, oh, it's something I'm eating. You know, we can really learn that from like functional medicine and get food intolerances and avoid foods. And maybe there's a period of time where that is helpful. But like you're saying too, the more I heal, the better it gets. And it seems like it kind of flares around big releases, big stuff coming up. I had it, mine flared up a couple of weeks ago when I had a big thing moving through, and it was like, I laid on my gym floor. I got a black floor and I scratched my head, and it was like something snowed there. Now if I went and did that, I don't know that it would do that again. You know, it can come and go so fast. And for me, it's about allowing it to be there instead of like going to let's red light, let's do this, let's, you know, come in and try to fix it. But
yeah. Whereas last time for me, like when my peak, I'm putting all the things on it, only making it worse, you know?
That's what I learned recently with like the brain retraining stuff, is like what we focus on, we're giving energy to, and the brain prioritizes the symptom or the emotion that feels stuck. And so instead of moving through, knowing that this thing is coming up and out, it's like we're attaching to it and we're thinking, oh, this must mean something about me now, instead of kind of, the picture I get is like, let's kiss and wave goodbye. Because we're going to feel it as we go back through it. But the more we kind of hold on to it, the more stuck it gets. And if we can just kind of love it as it moves through. Simona, the Irwin, she was on the podcast a couple episodes ago. She talks about symptoms and the river of love. So we've got the symptom. It's flaring or whatever that is. And it's uncomfortable. And we may freaking hate it. But if we can be with it, and the way to do that is to bring this river of love in and to love it the whole time. And so you're, you know, repairing attachment, you're building safety, you're building capacity, you're staying with yourself through that wave. And then once you kind of see it move through, it's easier to show up and do that next time. It's kind of going against our conditioning that says, you know, run away from it, put a Band-Aid on it, fix it.
Right. When you just said symptom of love or river of love, right before you said that, I was almost picturing when you were talking about like holding on to it, I thought you're attaching so much fear, not you personally, but us, you know, attach fear and like what, you know, what's that putting in our system? You know, that's what the focus and energy would then be on.
Yeah. I mean, it's exhausting to try. I thought I had to be the doer of my body. You know, like, oh, I learned all these bio. Here we go. We're getting spiced up, warmed up.
the heater kicked in.
It's, I lost my train of thought.
Sorry.
No, you're good.
We talked about focusing on the fear.
Yeah, it's just so easy to let fear come in and dominate. That's what it did for me. And that's what her course is called, Befriending Fear. So learning to sit in that fire with an exaggerated nervous system, a sensitized nervous system that's, you know, flooded with adrenaline and cortisol. And the more we can ride that through and love that and be with it, the easier it is to let it go instead of attaching ourselves to it, making meaning out of it, and then avoiding it, and then creating an army of biohacks to help. That's what it was. The being the doer of our body, you know, because I learned so much about biohacking and nutrition and if I wake up and I'm feeling like shit, then I'm like, oh, I need to go do a workout, do a coffee enema, my fast until lunchtime, do a cold plunge and get some sunlight sometime today.
Mm-hmm. You had your checklist.
Yes. I would love to know. So you had, I think it's so cool how somebody pointed that out to you. You start doing this work. You realize you got to clean up this mess.
Mm-hmm.
You meet it head on. You realize you did too much too soon. You realize you need a community. And you find Irene's stuff in 2019. Mm-hmm. You did the 21-day. It took me 6 months to a year as well. So I get that. And then Smart Body, Smart Mind. So, like, tell us about how do we get to where we are now and what's that healing journey look like? Like, tell us that it gets better. I mean, is it still like this or is it things change?
No, it is definitely not like how it was. There was another pivotal point. So I had made some changes because we're so layered and there were really a lot of things going on beneath the surface. There was another pivotal time. So this was after my skin flare, started making some changes. I started hearing my family tell me that I was thin. So there was a day that I stepped on the scale and I was like, wow, that's like I was 98 pounds.
Wow. How much are you now?
About 128.
Yeah. Let's go.
Yeah.
Looking good.
Yeah. Big difference. Yeah. I put on 30 pounds. Yeah. So that was like another piece. And because of the work I was doing with Smart Body, Smart Mind, I was able to go to the gym. The first bit was triggering. I'd literally find myself in the corner by the weights, crouched down. I would freeze and, you know, just overwhelmed because there's a lot of big people. It's a mental health gym with a lot of heavy metal music. It's just big presence.
Yeah.
I'm still there. I still love the gym. I love the people. I can totally be me.
Did you have exercise background prior to this going back to the...
Well, I was an exercise physiologist and physical therapist. But what's interesting is my exercise was always groups. Okay. Always. Always did weight training in the group, Zumba classes. So I never did it on my own. So as I started trying to do this on my own, that's when I would get really triggered and I felt so small. I don't feel that way anymore. So I was able to start working with a trainer and, you know, started putting on weight. And it took me 3 years to put on those pounds.
What do you think made the shift going from the person frozen, crouching over first day of the gym versus now you're still sticking with it. You gained 30 pounds. Like, what's that? Where'd the concept?
There was an interesting thing that you just asked me that question. For some reason, it took me back to one of the days that I found myself in the corner. I remember hearing Irene's voice talking about freeze. And I thought, okay, I think I just froze and I think I need to tell someone. So I went up to the desk attendant and I was working with him at a physical therapy office at the time. He was a physical therapy assistant. So I knew him personally. We had a really good connection. So I went and I said, hey, Chris, I think I just like shut down, froze in the corner. And I know I'm okay, but I just need to tell someone about it. And he looked at me and he said, you are okay. And I don't remember all the words he said, but me verbalizing it and then being seen, I just felt supported and it was this switch. I never got triggered again like that in the gym.
Wow.
So then once I started sticking with, you know, I was there. I never went more than three times a week. Three was what I wanted to do. I didn't want to be a bodybuilder. I just wanted to, you know, get stronger, build healthy bones, all the things that a middle-aged woman should want to do. And I just found the improvements. I mean, I was growing in capacity and size. I was gaining weight. I had energy. And then all the other things started shifting. I had incredible improvements with my gastrointestinal health. My boundaries and relationships had improved. I actually started reading. Reading had always been very, very difficult for me for all the challenges I had with being able to sit still and focus. So started reading. I just started eating better. Like I felt myself being very in tune with what my body needed. And then I just felt excited about sharing all the things that I was doing. That's when I started recognizing now I'm implementing that into not only my personal life, but that's when I started adding pieces of it into what I do professionally. So that's when I felt like it really was integrating. But yeah, it took years, you know, it takes years, but it is worth it. It's worth the time, the effort, because you are making changes along the way. And connections, and you're learning. So, yes, it took me a long time, but, you know, I got this life to live, and if that's the way I'm going to live it, that's great. And I know there's more to learn.
It's beautiful. I love you sharing that journey, and I know so many people, it gives hope and excitement about what's possible. You know, one thing I'm thinking, I don't know if this is an actual pattern, but I see this a lot in people. It's like, I think you come to this work feeling too much or not feeling anything at all, right? You were in the, I don't feel anything. I'm good. I'm okay. I'm fine. I'm writing that down in my little circle over here. And I felt like my hair was on fire, right? Mm. Like I felt so much that I don't know what to do with this. Like I'm going to jump out of my skin. If you lit me on fire, I wouldn't know because that's how I always feel, right? And so I had to learn to interpret what I'm feeling. And eventually found out there was a lot of stuff there. Same thing with you. You're fine. I find out there's some work I need to do. So we start doing that work.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like your system blows up. You get more activation. And for me, I already had the activation. At some point, I got a shit ton of fatigue.
Mm.
Did you have a fatigue? Is that how it comes? I see this pattern of people come in that the too much eventually go into fatigue once there's safety. They've been running on fight or flight. They're stuck in fight or flight, running on the hamster wheel, and they step off the hamster wheel. There's more safety. We drop into a deep fatigue and feel what it feels like to run on a treadmill our whole life. And then maybe the I'm fine people go into more activation before they come out the other side. Does that resonate with you?
I think I understand what you're saying. I'm trying to relate it to me personally.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So it was when we just did our second in-person training, when we were at Brew Creek together.
So this is fast forwarding to last year.
Yeah. This is how long this stuff takes. The awareness. I remembered at that training, I recognized my flight responses, how prevalent they've been. Now, this is me noticing it. This isn't saying it only started happening then. I just really became uber aware of it.
Aware for the first time.
Yes. And it was a comment that Irene said. Mm-hmm. We were in the round table and we were doing some of our on the spots and somebody was describing sympathetic. And in the description of it, she made a comment to say, well, most of the time when we're talking about sympathetic mobilization energy, we're talking about fight, not so much flight. And I remember inside going, no, 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 no. I resisted that. I was like, no. And then I realized I was resisting that statement because I am a flighter. I'm not a fighter. So my movement, my feet, my hands, my inattentiveness, my impulsivity, all are components of a flight response.
I remember that. I remember that. And I resonate with that, too. I'm definitely a
mm-hmm.
I don't know if I'm kind of both.
Well, we could certainly toggle, right?
But my tendency is to avoid and get away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I want to run. If you corner me, I got taught that if I fight, because I was way bigger than people growing up, and I think it was like a let's keep Mitch from hurting people. Like, hey, if you fight somebody, I'm going to fight you when you get home. And so I was terrified of getting punished for fighting. And so there, and that's why it's sometimes difficult for me to access anger. It's something I've done slowly. Mm-hmm. But there also is the other day, here's my fight response. It's kind of both. I was, I woke up the other morning and the house was quiet. It was me by myself. I had a little wake and bake. It was Saturday morning. So I'm kind of stoned and I go into the, I have this fear that there's a snake on the step coming out of the garage. I hate snakes.
Okay.
Something is there. I think it was like a broom. Pretty sure it was a broom. Yeah. It was like a little broom and a sweeper. And I felt something come up. And in my mind, it was a snake like jump. Like, and I kicked that thing across. I kicked it across the room and I just sat there and died. So I got a little bit of fight in me too. But to your point.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think moving back and forth and understanding. I think it's a good point to say the nervous system is always changing. We may have a dominant state. It's not good or bad. It's adaptive. Just like Lisa's functional freeze that allowed her to get through some horrible shit when she was a kid and get to a point where she's an adult and going, I'm fine. That's mm-hmm. extremely adaptive. There's nothing wrong
with it. Very adaptive.
You know, thank God we had it. Yeah. I mean, yeah. If we didn't have that, we'd be dead or something like that, you know? So it's to really highlight there's no good or bad nervous system.
Right.
All the nervous system states and feelings are welcome and approved and all good. And we have multiple states that are always changing. And the more that we can, like I just did a nervous system quiz. That's why this is kind of fresh on my mind. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm looking here at our state dependent behavior that we got from Irene. I believe that's in Smart Body, Smart Mind. And it's real easy to go, okay, I'm in ventral or I'm in low tone dorsal. And so let me enjoy this. Let me, you know, be whatever it is. It's like we can get into fixing and figuring it out, or we can go, hey, my nervous system is constantly changing. The more I can observe it and be with myself and give myself what I need, the easier it is to move back into a better state, like better window of tolerance type situation.
For sure. Yep. Yep. We can, it's not wise to force it.
Yeah. Yeah. You mean not being my authentic self and like, going back into my patterns is not good to bring into a session.
Right.
Deep into the pool, black or white, thinking all the
But with that said, we can, if you notice things, like for me, I noticed the fight or the flight tendencies. I worked with it.
Oh, yeah. Tell me about how that's evolved since then. I think that'd be great for people.
Yeah. So what I did when I came home from that to integrate is I started doing things like I would move my arms like I'm running, or I'm not a runner at all, which is so interesting. I truly do not care for that form of exercise.
Me neither.
But I will run with my arms, or I'll run in place, or I'll do things that feel like running. Or I'll do little spurts, like I'll take my dog for a walk and let's just run for one of the blocks. And that's enough for me. And I realized that's what I needed to complete that experience.
So how did you use that? So did you like feel the feeling of flight coming up and you're like, oh, this is a time for me to practice?
Yes.
And what happened when you followed the impulse?
It really could have been something as simple as like, you know, running in place, or sometimes it's just my arms. And then there were a few times that since I noticed it quite a bit happening, that I would do it almost proactively. So that was part of my morning routine. So I step out on the ground every morning at sunrise. I do my lymphatic exercise. And I was like, well, I'll just add this little running ditty to my, you know, habit stacking. So I would do that. And I'm pretending I'm running into the field because there's deer there. I'm pretending I'm with the deer. And sometimes they look at me. They don't bark.
She's running with us.
I'm running with the deer. So I would just do that, you know, for a few weeks, maybe. Maybe it was like 2 months of that.
Did you feel an impulse to do that? Or you're saying you got ahead of it? Like, is that something you woke up with?
Well, both things were happening where I would get an impulse, like while I was walking my dog, okay, I'm going to run. Or even if I was going to a meeting somewhere outside of my office, I had my backpack on one of the blocks downtown. I decided I'm going to run this block. I just felt that impulse to do it. And I didn't care what it looked like. I just ran. And it was just enough. I didn't need to go run a marathon or anything like that. It was just enough to get some of that energy up and out. And then I also did it proactively in the morning. And that lasted for about 2 months until I realized, or maybe three, I'm not sure. And then I started recognizing some of the fight side was happening. So I was like, okay, that's in there too. But I needed to deal with the flightiness.
That's a Zumba class is going to come in handy right then.
Yeah. So that's where that came into play. And I started, you know, playing a little bit more of with the healthy aggression.
Let me pause you right there.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever I love this, I think it's so cool that we can follow our body's wisdom and do what it, give it what it needs, and we feel better. Was there anything while you were doing, when you decided, I'm going to, you know, do this, but get ahead of it, I'm going to move my arms like I'm running. Is there anything that like lets you know, like, this is a good thing for Lisa? What was happening as you started to practice that?
That's a really good question. The shifts I were noticing were just overall clarity and calmness.
Mm. Like
I just...
Like, thank you for giving me what I need.
Yes, I just felt better. The one interesting thing is, though, I had a somatic experiencing session with a provider, a practitioner for me. So I was the client and I explained what I was doing. And she had asked me if I was running to a safe place. And that was not something I was doing. When I started doing that, I forgot this piece. When I did that, this is important.
Yeah, it feels like it.
I have goosebumps.
Yeah, I'm getting them too.
When I did that, that is when it shifted to fight.
And then what did the fight look like? So it sounds like you're like, all right, I'm done running. Now I'm going to turn around and beat this thing's butt. Like, how did that look like?
Yeah, you know how that showed up? I noticed I had a lot of tension in my jaw and I chipped a tooth.
Oh, yeah. You told me. We talked about that. We talked.
Yeah.
And we connected and had like an hour and a half where we just jammed out and compared notes. And yeah, I remember that now.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, some of that fight is still in there. But that's just interesting how that all played out.
Yeah. That's beautiful. I love mm-hmm. it. I love you sharing all that. It's so cool. Like, and the reason I ask about, you know, what did your body do?
Mm-hmm.
How would you know? Because when I tend to get the message from my body and respond in the way that my body is looking for, and for me, that's been allowing sensation and symptoms to be like, you're allowed. And I learned through deep exploration that that's what I wanted as a kid. I wanted to be validated and allowed. I wanted to belong. I wanted to be wanted and needed. And so what I was doing is constantly telling my symptom to go away and that you're not allowed to be here and I need to fix you. And that's that prioritizing that symptom and constantly focus on it keeps us stuck. And when I started turning towards it and tracking it and staying with it and just saying, you're allowed to be here. I love you. It's all good. I'm getting a can feel emotion coming up as I'm even talking it. My body would get like, just like when we just felt that it's really good to drop this tip in here of running to safety and we both got chills. That's what my body does. It gives me chills. It's like, yo, go, go, Mitch, go, go, Mitch, go. You know, it's like, And it's like whenever I get stuck in my little process and I don't know what to do, uncertainty is a trigger for me. And if I can just be with the uncertainty and trust that, hey, the next thing is going to show up, then I get an image, then I get a sound, then heat moves through. And it's in my body in the background. I got like little cheerleaders going on, and that's the chills that are coming on my body. And so when that happens, I know I'm in a good place. And so that's building trust and safety and confidence and repairing, you know, when we don't show up for ourselves and we're constantly abandoning ourselves and we're listening to everybody else, our body's like, hey man, what about me? Cause I feel like
exactly
that's where the answers are.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Mitch. Yeah. What a good practice. And you're, you know, I think about neuroplasticity, you're creating new grooves, new ways of being.
Yes.
And that is such a powerful, it's a big word, but such a powerful process that's available for everyone, for better or for worse. And the cool thing is we're here for better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. One thing that I heard recently, I think Simona said it too. And she said, safety is something we build through repetition. And it's showing up for ourselves no matter what's going on. And that was so big for me. You know, my early stuff was like, hey, if you get too emotional, then like, we're going to fix this or you're going to be punished or you're ridiculed or whatever it is. And so in those moments, that's when those little parts, that younger self needs us the most. And if we're, I always share the analogy of like a little kid showing up at our door in the freezing rain and we're just slamming the door in their face. So what happens when we welcome in and give them a blanket and say, tell me everything, what's going on, dude?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so much repair can happen in that.
Mm-hmm.
I want to kind of switch gears a little bit.
Sure.
I want to know about fascia.
I love fascia.
That you've worked with. I think it's so fascinating that there's all these doorways into the nervous system that the fascia holds so much. I used to think that I was a chiropractic guy. I still like chiropractic work. And I'm like, oh, I just got to pop it, you know, and it's just out of alignment. Something's wrong with me. I feel like I'm bringing my patterns into, you know, my body. And I've learned that, man, fascia is freaking amazing. So much tension and trauma can be held there. And even in the digestive, whenever we start to, you and I both, I think, burping in session and then digestion improving. I don't think I ever had gut issues. I think I had trauma issues that were held in my gut. Like,
yep.
What can you tell us about, we've got, you know, 15, 20 minutes left here.
Okay.
Like,
sure.
Dive into it, man. Tell me, like, what gets you interested in it?
Yeah, how did I get interested in fascia? I got a flyer in my mailbox, and it said, you have this option for continuing education. And I decided that's what I was going to do. And I did, I trained with John Barnes, who's one of the first individuals who founded myofascial release. There's a lot of different forms, but his is one of the original. And I was sold on it immediately. I knew that was a piece for me and for those who I worked with. And I've been working with the fascial system at least for 15 years. And I think it's been my personal saving grace because I use a lot of different tools to work on the fascial system. And then of course I offer that as care for others. And my understanding of fascia has changed. I used to just think about it as a body sweater.
Okay.
Like the sweater that's underneath the skin that attaches to every single system, every organ, every cell, every muscle, every fiber, from the head to the toe, from your fingertip to your other fingertip. It actually gives us our shape. In our form, we like to think it gives us a shape of this skeleton, or that artwork, this shaped. We are skeleton shaped, but if you removed all the fascia, that skeleton would just be a pile of bones. It would not be held up by anything. So fascia truly gives us support as well as this structure. It gives us our ability to move freely, or if there was a restriction, you know, not so much movement.
Yeah.
The interesting thing in this August, I was I was blessed with an opportunity to attend and participate in the International Fascia Research Congress. It's a mouthful, I know. And it was in New Orleans. And this year they talked about fascia and the autonomic nervous system a lot. Wow. It was the first time that they brought those pieces together in the way that they did. It was so important to the fascia research group to bring this in that they brought Stephen Porges in to be a keynote speaker. And he was the very last keynote. So he like brought everything together and he talked about how our fascial system is not passive. It's a dynamic sensory system. Like it's the interface between all systems, but he focused in on the autonomic nervous system. And he talked about the autonomic nervous system shapes and is shaped by the fascial system, get this, through stages or states of connection.
Okay, so then what does that mean? Slow that down for us.
Yep. So the autonomic nervous system, so our system that governs all of our bodily systems, all the things that happen on an autonomic, automatic level is shaped by the fascial system, this connective sweater web. And it's bidirectional. So the autonomic nervous system with its spiny senses, I got to be a little bit on. And the fascial system has its own sensory system. When they collaborate, they communicate. And when there is connection, like you and I are connecting today, when we connect with people, especially in really, you know, safe or safe enough circumstances, and that connection is healthy, our system will be
settled. Because it feels safe.
It'll feel safe and settled and grounded. Which is a beautiful setup for the fascial system to be most optimal.
So I had a client one time that he came over to my house. This is like my first client that I did this work with. And he goes, I'm just giving an example to see if this will be. He came over, we were lifting weights and he couldn't get his shoulder because of his neck, couldn't get his shoulder above his or dumbbell above his head, something like that. So I'm like, oh, you got to go to the chiropractor. You got to go see my massage person. Nothing helped. And then 6 months later, I'm talking to him. I'm like, tell me what's going on with this. Like, because I was fascinated. Now I'm like, okay, tell me more. I can't, it didn't help. And he told me, watch. And for the audience, they can't see me. I'm bringing my shoulders up to my ears. So he goes, yeah, I just get home at the end of the day and I can't do these walks that you want me to do. I'm so tired. And I'm like, oh, what's going on with your neck here? So if I'm in fight or flight, if I don't feel safe, then my fascia is going to express in this tight, tense way. And so when I notice, oh, hey, you're tensing, or I notice I'm with my friend Lisa and I'm feeling more comfortable, now I can kind of drop into safety.
Mm-hmm.
You mean by that?
Yes. Yes. So the fascial system has so many sensory fibers. It's got so much going on to inform all the other systems. But if we just look at the autonomic nervous system, the fascial system, if there's an element of tension, then the autonomic nervous system is going to say, oh, there must be something to be afraid of. Yeah. We're going to be on guard now.
Yeah. So interesting.
It really is so interesting.
And then what is fascial release? Is that like, hey, you've got some tension and you're...
So what's interesting about that term is there is some arguments about, does something actually release? What changes?
Yeah.
And it actually can stretch and modify and versus like what's actually releasing? Like there's not... that's what's not completely known. Like, what is actually this release component? What's typically thought of as a release is there's some state change. That's my perception. There could be some emotions, tears,
okay.
Verbalization. There could be a movement that is now released. So if I think about what's so interesting is I went through myofascial release training before studying, doing this deep dive into nervous system.
Yeah.
So the things that I learned there, I'm recognizing, oh, this releasing that's happening, this is actually an individual wanting to complete
yes.
a procedural memory of a moment in time that they couldn't do, a fight that they wanted to fight off, or maybe they're reenacting a fall and they get themselves back up, or pushing someone away. All the things that we may not get to do in that moment of trauma, accidents.
That makes a lot of sense. So here's something I've noticed with me, and I love that I come see people like you all the time. Got a lot of body stuff from football and all the sports and car accidents, you name it. And when I've done Feldenkrais, you know, I know put the lacrosse ball here and do this soft tissue mobilization, and that's supposed to release it. You know, those things kind of help for me. It feels like it's just kind of digging sometimes. And then when I've done Feldenkrais and I'm really slowing down, paying attention to my body, how I'm moving through space, it's like magic that the system relaxes. I've never felt anything released. Yeah. So is it possible to physically manipulate something, or do we need safety, completion, slowness, connection with the body? Is that what's really going on? Things are releasing. And until we get there, we're kind of just digging and poking and prodding. Or
it's possible. It's possible that it could be a subtle change. So when I work with individuals, if I don't use lacrosse balls or really hard balls, although some of my students have chosen to do that on their own later on, but I would never begin somebody in that place because, as we know, you can do too much too quickly.
Yeah.
So a hard ball versus, like, I have this nice squishy ball. This isn't necessarily one I use. I just was squeezing it while we're talking.
Yeah.
That softness can be a better place for them to begin the work, because if they're already guarded and they're trying to take something hard into there, it's like, you know, no.
Like, that was me, I thought.
Well, really firm, you know, a firm surface, hitting a firm surface.
You corrected me on that so many times in person where you're like, no. You know, you don't need, I felt like, hey, because I'm so tight and I've been tight for so long, I need like a freaking hammer. And really it's more like, no, you need a feather.
Yep. Enter slowly. Yes. That's one of the things. So when I went to the Fascia Research Congress, I got to speak for 20 minutes and I brought up three different teaching points. One of them I taught on a pain model, which I could certainly link into the notes because it might take a little too long to talk about it. But it's a pain model. I use it as an acronym to work on applying the principles of the work I do. And one of the other things is, well, if I'm going to do self-myofascial release or self-care, how much pressure do I give? How much stretch do I stretch? Well, it really depends. It depends on what is the nervous system's state. Where are you at that time? And what do you have available to you to use? There's so many pieces of it. So there's not one answer because everyone is so, so incredibly different and their system is so different. So you kind of have to test the waters. And I always say, begin with less because you can add more. Because if you're going to start with that hard, you know, pounding in, I don't know, maybe this is me talking about like how my face blew up. I wouldn't want that for anyone. I wouldn't want anyone's system to blow up if we could prevent that. Now, yes, I've learned a lot and I probably wouldn't be where I'm at today if I didn't have that explosion of my system. I don't know that I would have looked up survival mode. So yes, there's a silver lining, and I always tend to find silver linings and things. It's easy for me to find the bright side, but I don't really want that for anyone.
Yeah, I had a similar experience, and I think especially learning that from Irene, you know, too much too soon and too little too late. You know, it's, yeah. I love your response to working with people, because that's what I hate being put on the spot. And it's like, hey, how do you work with this person? It's like, dude, I presented as someone who had, or I thought I had, this massive capacity to take on anything, and I had zero capacity. And mm-hmm. you may think that and come in with that belief, and you'll get humbled, hopefully,
yeah,
in one way, shape, or form. But I always go back to, your nervous system is the map. And if we can trust that and stay with that and follow that, and that may mean slowing way down and resourcing and pendulating and titrating. If that's enough for today and that's how you feel, we're done. That's the work that we need for today. And the more we can trust that, like, we know so much, we have so many tools, and that's what's available when we're working with people. But if we take people into the deep waters too soon,
yeah,
and that is, I wouldn't wish that on any. I've been there. I know you've been there. Irene's been there. You know, that's the skin compartment. That's the blowing up. That's the perfect storm that so many people talk about. And like, this is something Irene and I talked about offline, is a lot of, that's the people that come to this work.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of that rite of passage or the initial process. It's gonna come. I don't know. I don't want to say it's gonna come, because that used to scare the crap out of me when I had already had a perfect storm. I'm like, I can't do another one. But that's why we talk about these things, because I think it's about trusting your body, trusting you, and showing up consistently and building that safety one little drop at a time.
Run a little drop at a time. Dee, dee, dee.
So what's it look like now? I could keep asking about the fascia, but I mm-hmm. want to kind of wrap this thing up and sure. definitely get you back for a round two. How do you help people now, and where can people find you? If you yes. sound.
Sure, sure. So I do work locally in my town. I'm in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, not too far from Philadelphia. I guide small group classes and individuals in what I call therapeutic movement, blending all the components I've mentioned, physical therapy, there's yoga elements, myofascial release, and of course, educating on nervous system health. While my classes and courses are in person, I do appreciate being connected with anyone who feels drawn to this kind of work. So feel free to reach out to me. And, you know, maybe there is a potential collaboration, especially in the area of movement professionals. If anybody would like to know a bit more about how I pull these pieces together, that could be something that could be done online. So that would be a possibility. I also would be willing to share with anyone my slide PowerPoint presentation that I offered for the Fascia Research Congress. I spent a lot of time on it, and I would love to share that.
Can we put that in notes? Would you be willing to share that there? We could put
absolutely. We can talk about what that looks like. Also, if anyone is in the Philadelphia, Baltimore, Washington, D.C. area, there are possibilities that I could do wellness events in the future, because I've been in all of those areas, and those are possibilities that I could offer, whether it's a one-time event or a retreat. So, you know, we can stay in touch that way. My website is Move Well with Lisa, and that's my Instagram as well. So I always like to support people to move better and feel better, rest better, and just be better in their bodies and their thoughts and just in their day. One thing we didn't talk about in here at all is play and how important that is. So my classes are, I hope, fun. They're fun for me. I I know sometimes it can be hard stuff that comes up, but if we can lighten the load a little bit along the way and add just, you know, whether it's a little bit of sense of humor or just some enjoyment in the movement itself, that can really escalate the learning experience. So if we're learning something and it's in a pleasant framework, the learning is more powerful. It's a lot more potent when we learn in play.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's so much as opposed to learning in fight or flight, though I've learned recently the brain adapts or learns very quickly in a fight or flight state because it's like more life or death situation. Have you ever heard that?
I can see that.
Yeah. But I appreciate you sharing that because something that, you know, I see in the group from all of us from all over the world is finding good help. And so I'm glad that you mentioned those areas that are around you because I know that if anybody's in that area, they're going to be really lucky to get to work with Lisa. And I'm talking about play too. I love Lisa's silliness. We didn't cut up that much, but know that me and Lisa
have too.
Like wiggly little energy and we love to cut up and be silly. So.
Yes.
Lisa, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Mitch.
And sharing.
I'm so glad for you that you're doing so well and you're healing and sharing all the things.
Likewise.
Keep doing all your good work, Mitch.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I think there's so many good nuggets. I think my big takeaway today was the running to safety. So I really appreciate you sharing that. That's huge. It's like these little things that we can do. Like for me, orienting not too long ago, I realized that I was being like hyper-vigilant with my orienting and letting mm-hmm. the eyeballs drop back into my skull a little bit was very relaxing to my system. And so these little tips of, have you thought about running? If you're running, oh yeah, I run a lot. I want to get that energy out. That feels good. Well, where are you running to? You know, you're running for something that's scary. You're running towards something safe. I imagine the latter is going to provide more safety and capacity and regulation. So thanks again for sharing your journey. Everybody reach out to Lisa, give her a follow. And, you know, certainly we'll have to have you on for a round two sometime.
Thank you so much, Mitch.
Thank you. Bye-bye, Lisa.
Bye-bye.